First, with a sharp increase in over 65s renting and more people reaching retirement with a mortgage over their head, an initiative to help seniors stay in their communities is the subject of our discussion. The Retirement Commissioner reports a growing number of people retiring without owning a house. According to Age Concern, there's been a 44% rise in over 65s renting over the last three decades, and some New Zealanders are finding themselves homeless in older age for the first time in their lives. Rents are rising faster than superannuation, even when supplemented by the accommodation benefit. Research shows that ageing in place reduces loneliness and is linked to longevity. That seniors in public or private rentals are more likely to live in poor conditions, with worse home care services, and are more likely to go into residential care. People who own or are still paying for their own home often put off repairs, instead putting up with cold, unsuitable or unsafe housing. Older people faced with having to move away from their communities to find suitable, affordable accommodation and to access the services and care they need are dislocated from whānau and friends. An initiative by the Stewart Island Seniors Cottage Trust is gathering pace to help older, low-income residents stay on the island and in their community instead of having to move away to live on the mainland when they have to downsize. We'll hear more about that in a moment from project leader Bruce Ford. Good morning, Bruce. Great to have you with us.
Good morning, Catherine. How are you? You've summed it up pretty good.
Good. Is it a beautiful, crisp, clear day down there? Is the main thing?
Yes, certainly. We've got a good start to the morning, so even better to hear you.
Great. We'll come and chat in a moment. With us also is Kay Saville-Smith, Director for the Centre for Research Evaluation and Social Assessment, Leader of Research Projects on Downsizing, and Co-Leader of the Affordable Housing for Generations Research Programme. Morena, Kay. Welcome.
Morena, Catherine.
Let's begin with what we know is happening. It's always been assumed New Zealand Super would be set at the on the basis that you're in your own fully owned mortgage-free home in retirement. It's just not the story anymore for many people.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Catherine. And kia ora, Bruce. I'm looking forward to hearing from your response to this. What New Zealand has done is had a what we broadly call a 10-year revolution. That is our commitment, our ability, our house pricing, the sort of investment that governments have put into housing over many, many decades, led us to a very high home ownership society. So if I were to have been born in 1927 to 1930, close to 90% of people in that cohort would have ended up in mortgage-free home ownership at 65. In 20 years' time, we can expect people turning 65, not all those over 65, but turning 65, therefore probably becoming very reliant on their national superannuation. Probably less than 50% of those people are going to be in home ownership, and most of those won't be mortgage free.
And the odds are they're going to struggle to make ends meet, because as we said, your super is set on the basis that your accommodation less cost, but your accommodation is paid off.
Yes, you've pre-saved, essentially, for your retirement.
So again, it's the same generation, and let's make this clear, every cohort is having a crisis in housing right now, but the same cohort that's struggling to buy right now, perhaps, is going to be really in trouble at retirement.
They certainly are, and they're going to age in rent, essentially.
Yeah. That's something that's new. Even those who are buying are going to have mortgages of a size.
Well, you know, what we know is about first homeowners is that they're actually a very small proportion of all purchases at any moment in time. So they're already squeezed. There is a sense of panic among first homeowners, and with rising house prices, they both perpetuate those, but they respond to them by overbidding, essentially.
Okay. Retirement Commission is already flagging this. I think one in five now are hitting retirement still with a mortgage on their home.
Yeah.
So that's of the earlier generation.
Yeah.
And the way things are heading, the Retirement Commission is saying a growing proportion of retirees are going to be in this situation. You're saying in 20 years' time, over half won't have paid off.
At 65 years' birthday.
Understood. Yeah. Okay. What else is happening? So we've lost that really, the bedrock that we had of home ownership as a security and as the assumption when it comes to setting New Zealand Super. What else is happening for people reaching retirement when it comes to housing trends?
Well, of course, the big change in New Zealand is, you know, not only is the declining rates of home ownership among families, but the concentration of our housing stock is in the private rental market largely. That the still home ownership is the main part of the stock. Owner-occupiers are the big owners, but actually the trend is that more and more of the stock gets concentrated in by private investors. Now, New Zealand has always had a very lowly regulated rental market. It's just changed in recent times, but even with the recent reforms, it's not a strongly regulated market. Tenure security is low, so people can't always know that they're going to have a home. Their ability to make their house a home is low, and the condition of that stock is poor. And, of course, on top of that, what we have is councils saying, should we be in or out of pensioner housing? We have also a huge undersupply of public housing. So there's a desire to build more and more of that. But, of course, older people are unlikely to be in Category A or Category B for public housing.
So even if the public purse picks up more of the housing crisis at the moment, those retirees won't be first in the queue to get into it.
Not okay. For public housing.
What is the experience of older people renting? What are the issues if you are renting?
I think the main experiences are threefold. Firstly, the lack of affordability. So they are really oppressed by costs, and they are not, even though they're very attractive to landlords in terms of their behaviour in general, they're not attractive to landlords in terms of raising rents because their incomes are
So they want workers because they can see a path
they
to
can see a path
continually
to raising their
okay.
rent. The second thing is often dwellings themselves are not well maintained within the rental stock, and they're often not very suitable for seniors anyhow, because seniors actually do need both space on one hand, but also accessibility and functionality. And our stock generally, not just the rental stock, doesn't do that.
Are you concerned, this was another article from the weekend, are you concerned that now there's a building boom on, the highest number of consents, I think, since the 1970s, please excuse me, that we might be building for what appears to be the immediate demand, perhaps people still in child-raising cohorts, but actually we're not building with a growing retirement population in mind. In other words, we're building houses that might not be suitable for the baby boomer bulge retiring and beyond.
I think that's absolutely true. I think we also have to recognise that even in building booms, it does not necessarily bring house prices down, may not even curtail house prices. So the affordability problem still remains. We know internationally and New Zealand that it's not just getting enough supply, it's getting enough supply at the right price points with the right design.
Okay, so here we go from this article, Sunday Star Times at the weekend. By 2036, 22%, so over one-fifth of the New Zealand population will be 65 or older, and that is not being reflected in the kinds of houses that are being built at the moment. What is your view on what it would take, bearing in mind there's a housing crisis for everywhere. Students through to families, mm-hmm. through to retirees? What is it you believe we need to think about with where we're heading with the retirement age population? For example, is there potential in this growing build-to-rent market that appears to be developing?
Well, let's take the build-to-rent. We've always had build-to-rent in New Zealand. Many, many apartments, many, many houses are built so property investors can take them up and then on-rent them. So we've always had that. Is there an issue here around, and I have to also say the community housing sector is also built to rent in the 60s and 70s. Councils were assisted with low-cost finance to build pensioner housing. So getting good housing for people through targeted housing provision, building, is important. Build to rent just as a way of getting there probably will not work. So what we do need to do is target very much low-income people, recognising that we can move a lot of most older people actually want to stay in the homes that they're already in, but actually also a lot of older people want to move within their communities, not in, stay in their home, but they, their place is important.
Right. So there needs to be some overall planning based on demographics. So it's not just that stock overall is available, but the right stock in the right place is available.
Yes, and in the right design. And it's really interesting to see some LifeMark councils really looking at LifeMark, which is a way of getting universal design.
Can you explain more about LifeMark, please?
LifeMark is a voluntary accreditation system which says, can this dwelling be adapted over time? And it's got a set of tick boxes you do. Now, it's interesting, some it's not under law because our law allows houses to be built without universal design, so it's a voluntary thing. But what it does do is it allows some councils, for instance, to say, if you reach a LifeMark accreditation, we're going to give you some opportunities here.
Is this things like having wide enough hallways for the future, having good access for the future? Future-proofing.
It's future-proofing. It's actually having quite strong walls, so if you need to put rails on, it's having an opportunity, if it's double-storey, to put a lift in. You don't have
to put the lift in. So you're saying councils could almost tie that to consenting. You don't have to build it that way now, but there has to be the adaptability.
Well, for instance, Thames Coromandel, I believe, and I hope I'm not quoting them inappropriately, but my understanding is that they've extended the coverage for a site. If you have LifeMark, you can cover your site with your building a little bit more than if you don't have LifeMark.
So it affects the overall profitability. There's nothing lost to the developer, there's something gained.
And there's nothing lost to the council.
Look, the other point of build to rent is back to your point. Will the preference still always be those who are working because the rents can be set higher? Or is that the possibility, because build to rent, the point of this is, and this is where we're not talking about having individual landlord owners, we're talking about investing in trusts that might, or companies that might build these. There might be security of tenure, for example. There might be a number of benefits attached to it. Perhaps you can do more to the property than you could in a fully private rental. But the problem will still be the price point for many retirees.
The problem is always the price point. So one of the great parts of the sector that has built for rent has been the community housing providers. And they have then provided what we call submarket, a term I hate, long-term affordable rents. So it's not at where the latest bonds are set or even sometimes where the stock is set. It's actually to ensure the affordability is for that individual family. That has worked very, very well. But even that has really suffered over the last, well, on and off over the last 30 years because there hasn't been support for that. And so it's quite difficult for community housing providers and other providers getting capital finance to do these things.
Look, everyone we've spoken to for this interview, and it's been a lot, we've spoken to the Monte Cecilia Trust, we've spoken to Salvation Army, to Age Concern. Everywhere you look in the country, we're about to go back to Bruce on Stewart Island. This is an issue. And another key part of the issue, apart from the affordability, is the ability to stay in your community and to age in place. What does research tell us about the well-being impacts of being able, even if you move from one property to another, being able to stay in your community?
Well, there's two really important things. One is the support that seniors themselves get from their community and networks. Breaking networks and support often leads to all sorts of problems of isolation. Sometimes it can be associated with cognitive decline. There's all sorts of stuff there. But the other thing is for communities, having seniors in their communities that know and understand those communities, they're the bedrock often of those communities. And if you take them away, the community itself suffers.
Stay with us, Kay. Kay Saville-Smith, thank you. 23 minutes past 9 on 9 to noon. Just reintroducing Stewart Island Seniors Cottage Trust project leader, Bruce Ford. Bruce, I also think you're a councillor at the Southland District Council. Tell me about what's happening on Stewart Island that has moved you and others to try and find ways to help seniors who are having to move.
Well, thank you, Catherine. And certainly your previous speaker has covered a whole lot of things that I've got written here in my notes. And certainly by far the big thing is keeping our people in the community and the fact that our community is very caring. But out of 400 residents here, we have over 100 that are over the age of 60. So, you know, that in itself is part of our ageing community, and they're a very big help in the community. And as you've already mentioned, the fact that, you know, they look after the children. They are the babysitters, and they'll do the odd jobs around town and provide advice and look after the odd things that charities need to, though. They'll take a place at the museum and tell people about history and all those type of things. So that's a pretty important part. Now, we've been on this case for some time now, and it's not just easy. It's difficult to convince authorities that we have a preference to keep our people here. And the experience has been that once they have a mishap and go off to town, to hospital in Invercargill, that they'll finish up in a home and they just deteriorate and don't come back. And that's really not fair. So this is what we would try and alleviate, to have, at this stage, half a dozen nice, cosy cottages, all the expenses included, power, comms, you know, clean the windows, that sort of thing, so that those people can sit back and enjoy some retirement.
What's causing them to move? Is it that their properties are too big, too hard to maintain? What's causing them to need a new type of accommodation, Bruce?
Well, these people have been through family arrangements to get them to the stage, and the children have all left home, and they're more or less stuck with a larger family house, which ideally should be moved on to younger families. And, of course, they're bigger properties as they were in days gone by, and certainly ideal for a new family, and these folks need to downsize and into a cosy home, because we didn't have double glazing and some of those lovely things earlier days.
So electricity costs and other things are all part of the picture as well. Okay, so what's happening with the Seniors Cottage Trust? How have you been able to fund this? You're still in the process of building the cottages?
Oh, yes, we're very, very early days because of funding needs, and we've certainly we've got some land purchased at number 11 Argyle Street, which is right in the middle of the community, and we've had one or two benefactors on that. Many people have been helpful in assisting with the creation of the trust and legal advice on that. So valuers, lots and lots of people have been along and given their services to assist us with that. But we could do with another $1 million to tidy it up.
What is Habitat for Humanity's role?
Well, certainly Habitat have been very helpful, and Invercargill Habitat, Paul Sarank has been our mentor on that. We have a memorandum of understanding with Habitat on the basis that once we get the buildings completed, that they will handle the tenancies for us, because, you know, as people on the street here, lay people, I don't want to delve into people's finances. We want somebody independent to do that. And Habitat, being a CHIP-registered organisation, they can then access other assistance if and when required for the tenants.
Have you raised this issue with the government, with the housing minister, this issue that you're experiencing, and the fact that you're having to, you know, find very inventive ways of trying to fund this?
You're right. We are very, very inventive and very, very persistent. And I write to ministers all the time on various things. And certainly the housing one went to Megan Woods, and her advisors told her that in Southam there are only 6 applications for this type of thing in the whole of Southland, and that is quite ridiculous. And, you know, it does nothing at all for our cause, because that was the response.
How was that? Sorry to laugh, Bruce, but you're doing extremely well if that's the situation. But how was that figure of 6 reached? Like, what was the definition?
Your guess is as good as mine, and I could be quite blunt about my response to that, but not on air. And certainly that's ridiculous.
Well, you've got 6 on Stewart Island alone.
Of course. Well, that's what we intend to build, is 6. And, you know, in fact, we've got 100 people. They're not all going to be ready at the same time, but
But my point is, there's no one else in Southland looking for a single property like this.
I think Southland is in the same role, really. You know, we have lots of places around the region that have seniors in the same position, and they're struggling as well.
So the point is, that figure of six is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah,
could you speak to, even a little bit further up to Otago as well, to this general trend of people moving out of family homes and needing smaller and suitable properties? Is it an issue on the mainland as well? And is there anything like enough supply for the coming demand?
I don't believe so. I do follow these things because it's a pet of mine that further afield, Dunedin have something like 1,000 community houses, you know, and they're addressing it much better. In the day, they'll have a couple of hundred. So some of these other regions are trying a bit harder. Marlborough District, they have a plan to invest in building new properties, and they have a formula to do that, and without imposing on ratepayers, as it were. So there are ways of doing it, and it's just a matter of getting the thing started, and certainly some assistance or guidance from government, and that would be of a considerable help.
So that's Marlborough District Council has a plan?
Yes, they have some mythology in place that I've been watching, and there's a way.
Is there a waiting list for this sort of housing in Southland, Bruce, particularly focusing on older people? Because to Kay's point, the public housing needs work to priorities and are quite strictly categorised, and do some seniors struggle to get up the top of the queue?
I believe that some seniors are so proud that they are very reluctant to put their name in the hat, and they'll just struggle along until I expect they'll disappear and they wouldn't need a house then. So, you know, they're very proud people, and they've had their own life and hardships usually, but there's a lot of people I'm sure we don't even know about.
All right, Bruce, thank you for that. All the best with the initiative. Bruce Ford, Seniors Cottage Trust Project Leader on Stewart Island and a Southland District Councillor. Kay Sable-Smith, just back to you. Again, we're trying to build jigsaws in some ways with the housing problem as it affects different age groups, and also to look ahead, not build all the wrong things for 20 years' time. What are the parts of the jigsaw, and who should be part of trying to get it better planned than the last 30 years have been?
Well, I think the first thing is that we've got to recognise that everybody's housing situation is connected. So the situation of seniors is connected to younger people. So I often talk with seniors and I say, well, are you worried about young people? And they'll say, oh, yes, my grandchildren have got a problem getting into homes. And that could be rental as much as into home ownership. The point is, though, that unless we actually assist young people in getting decently housed, wherever that is, whether it's an owner occupation or in rental, we are going to have a futures problem. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that seniors often actually help their young people to their own detriment to try and deal with the housing crisis. So that's important. So we do need a systems view, which is intergenerational, actually.
Yes, but who does that? Because this is where it's leave to the market, which is well and good. But I've often made the point, private companies don't do zero planning because they believe in the market.
The problem about market is it's not a market failure if certain people don't get the right housing. It's because the market does not want to service those. So by definition, we have to have something more than just market investment.
So are you talking about a plan that increases public housing that considers this as a component, or are you talking about planning rules that, as you suggested earlier, might incentivise building a certain type of home?
I think we need to separate planning rules from having a plan. They're both important and they have to relate to each other. Firstly, public housing is not going to be the solution for our housing needs in New Zealand. It is part of it and it has declined. What we do need to do is harness our resources, both our household resources, but also to harness the equity that lies in other investors, but in a way that they're not, if you like, skimming off large amounts of cash or profit from that, but actually getting a good, solid return. We don't have that world. We haven't thought about that world. We haven't created the vehicles to do that. That is starting to happen now. It's starting to happen, obviously, down south. Can I just say something about the point about the six houses? One of the things that in New Zealand we have always done, certainly for the last 30 years, and even when I was a young housing officer before that, was we've always said, large numbers of people, that's where the need is, let's put our investment there. But actually, for small communities, if they've got six houses, I'm not going to debate the numbers, why not solve the problem 100% there? Because we have a national problem. But it's different in every place.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I misunderstood Bruce in what he was saying there, that apparently the housing minister believed there was only six.
That's what
six
I understood.
On the waiting list.
That's what I understood Bruce saying too.
I'm not sure that is a credible figure in the current environment. But anyway, I'm sure it will have had its way of being reached. So, Kay, just look, there's just one final comment, though. What I'm trying to get to the bottom of is, what's the structure that incentivises or sets up the kind of response you're talking about? Because just leaving to market doesn't get us there.
So I think that central government is critical, and it's always been critical, actually, what it does or doesn't
do. To build or to set rules and incentives?
Both. Part of the problem is that we have a toolbox which was very rich before 1990, and now we have a toolbox which has got virtually nothing in it other than direct provision and buying of transitional housing or paying large amounts for transitional housing. And that's really a knee-jerk reaction. And the accommodation supplement, which is an ineffective way of providing.
You've now got councils saying they want to be able to access the, the accommodation supplement.
They can access the accommodation supplement, all tenants, some homeowners can. What they are trying to get at is the income-related rent subsidy.
Okay. And what's that going to do? Just push up rents even more?
Well, potentially it could. And there is some issue about how councils decide what their rent should be for their dwellings. And there's a lot of words like, we're subsidising older people. I think if you drill back into the dollars, probably not.
Thank you, Kay Savile-Smith. Thank you, Bruce Ford.